Ian Tattersall is our guest on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell, I just asked him about the work he does in, with a perspective toward reverse engineering, working backward up evolution and emergent processes. Did I get that right, Bill? Let's see if it makes any sense right. to Dr. Tattersall.
Well, let's see what we can do. Reverse engineering is a sort of unfamiliar way of putting it to me, but certainly what you're doing, this is a historical science. You're trying to use what you know, the present, to reconstruct the past. And if that's reverse engineering, then that's a lot of what we do. We are our own model, if you wish, for ourselves. And there's a problem there, because we may not be in our present incarnation particularly typical of hominids in the past. So you have to be very, very careful when you apply your own experience, your own knowledge, your own behaviors to the reconstruction.
I have to ask this. Mm-hmm. How could one possibly be a hominid and not be like us?
Oh, well, that's very interesting question. Hominids are all members of a zoological family that, as far as we're aware, has been around for 5 million years, and our very remote hominid ancestors were very, very different from what we are
How?
Today. Oh, they were smaller bodied. They had a different kind of body structure right back there at the beginning. They had small brains and large faces, for example. You wouldn't, meeting one, have necessarily wanted to embrace a very early hominid into your own family situations. And somehow, over the succeeding 5 million years, this small-brained, archaically bipedal, big-faced form has given rise, in some way, to the form that we know today: large brain, big face, small face, excuse me, striding, upright, biped, with a very complex set of behavior patterns and this peculiar thing that we know as human consciousness.
Not going that far back and taking the Neanderthal, and we've only known about Neanderthals really since 1876. Isn't that the number? It isn't very long ago that we said, oh, at least we know they're not like, they aren't us. They are different, whether one gets in the species argument or not. But it's even difficult to imagine Neanderthals being markedly different, because we're so stuck on it's just us and anything that is a hominid is like us. But it doesn't have to be as far back as the really ancient relatives, does it?
I think the sticking point here is the size of the Neanderthal brain. Neanderthals had a brain as big as our own, and therefore it seems somehow unpalatably discriminatory to deny the Neanderthals a position within our own species, as it were. My view is that, in fact, you're doing Neanderthals no favor at all in being ecumenical and welcoming them into our species, because they were an evolutionary entity of their own. They were their own kind of hominid. It's not necessary that all hominids should do business, you know, the way that we do. And in fact, if we're ever going to understand the Neanderthals as the independent evolutionary entity that they were, we have to get away from looking at them as sort of junior league versions of ourselves or bizarre variants of Homo sapiens.
I was fascinated. I think it's in Extinct Humans. The physical, when you try to find the physical distinctions between Homo sapien and the Neanderthal, at one level it comes down to a break in each eyebrow and a chin. as distinguishing characteristics from one to the other, because the range of physiognomies of each of, within each individual species is so broad. That is striking.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is actually the eyebrow ridge and the chin are two features that we think are unique to Homo sapiens. We know actually, ironically, a lot more features that were unique to Neanderthals. Neanderthals, morphologically, anatomically speaking, are much better defined, actually, than Homo sapiens. Neanderthals had this extraordinary structure of the face with sort of the very big nose projecting very far forwards, for example, which is very, very characteristic and is not present in other extinct hominids. Now, some Neanderthal characteristics were present in other extinct hominids and are not present in us. For example, the form of the brow ridges is more primitive in that sense, you know, ancestral in Neanderthals than it is in Homo sapiens. But there are lots of distinguishing features of Neanderthals.
Early in the century, the 20th century, we talked about this great chain of being, and that was how we saw things. What you describe and what you show is an ongoing branching process, mm-hmm. which takes a little getting used to. What it suggests is that all these other species reach dead ends, that the speciation occurred, they survived for a time, and then they ceased to survive, which suggests that we may have more challenges than we are accustomed to thinking.
That's true. Our own species, Homo sapiens, may not be immune from the same triage effect. On the other hand, we are saddled with this notion that somehow that evolution is linear, that evolution consists of a gradual process of fine-tuning of populations over the eons so that a population at one point in time will give rise to another improved version of that descendant population.
This is an incremental.
It's not so much incremental. I mean, the idea of evolution as fine-tuning is a gradual kind of a notion. You know, given enough time and enough natural selection, and the breed will improve. And this is, as we suggested earlier on, is not the full story anyway. You know, that there may be some degree of truth in this characterization of what goes on, but it's only a very tiny part of the larger story.
The larger story seems a great deal more dramatic.
It is. It's a very eventful larger story. It's a story of species originating, going out and doing battle in nature and struggling to survive in competition with many other species, both close relatives and more distantly related forms. It's sort of an ecological drama, you know. With no particular end in sight and with a lot of extinction along the way. The origination of new species and the extinction of old species are essential parts of the evolutionary process.
I'm struck by how difficult the challenge you and your colleagues have selected, just in trying to understand, again, you know, my word, reverse engineer, but to go back and understand how we got here. There's a disconnect that you talk about that is striking in what we think of typically as adaptations within the context mm-hmm. of Darwinian evolution, but you talk about something that is exaptations, which is a fairly novel notion, but in some ways it makes it easier to describe what's going on, but it also, I would think, would make the job a lot harder, because what things that we thought were linked are not necessarily linked.
I'm going to ask you to pick up with that when we come back so that I don't have to interrupt you. Okay. I'd much rather interrupt Bill. Well, Russell and I are with Dr. Ian Tattersall, who is curator in the Department of Anthropology at the American Museum of Natural History here in New York City, where we have joined him. We'll all be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned for the Paula Gordon Show.